Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading a story called They Say He's Just a Family In-Joke, But I Know the Truth. Uncle Teddy is Real. It's by Nomass39 from Reddit. I hope you enjoy this story. Let me know if you did or if you didn't in the comments below. Let's get started. Do you have any of those childhood memories that just seem off? Those visions of the past that are so fragmented and vague, it almost seems like your brain doesn't want you pulling back the veil, doesn't want you to truly remember. Childhood is a scary time, after all. Adults shepherd you around a confusing world, giving you commands you must obey without understanding. And while they may smile and tell you everything is okay, deep down you had this innate knowledge that they were lying. Some abstract conviction that there was a darkness to this world your brain was not yet ready to understand. Like watching cartoons while hearing your parents scream at each other in another room, or making sandcastles on the shore of the ocean, trying to ignore the primal feeling that someone is watching you from the abyssal depths. I have a memory like that, and while everyone I knew, my sister, my parents, hell, even my therapist, has tried to tell me it's not real, that that man never existed, that an entire weekend of my life never happened, that it was all the product of false memories and an overactive imagination, I know with every fabric of my being that they're wrong. Uncle Teddy is real. He started off as a family in-joke. Every time us kids were bad, we'd be threatened with a visit to all Uncle Teddy's, as if it were the worst punishment imaginable. "Maybe we'll spend a weekend at Uncle Teddy's," my father would say whenever we argued, "and see what he has to say on the matter." They made a point of never explaining who this Uncle Teddy even was, or why he was supposedly so scary. That alone made it more effective than any specific threat could ever be. I used to love letting my imagination fill in the gaps. Like the little brat I was, I'd come up with stories to scare my little sister Kathy half to death. "Uncle Teddy is a child eater," I'd tell her. "And when you're sent to his house, he cooks you up and makes you into meatloaf." And then she'd cry and I'd get grounded. Then came that sunny June day, when I was looking forward to my last summer break before the looming specter that was middle school. Imagine my reaction when my mother told us that this time, genuinely and sincerely, we were going to Uncle Teddy's. I wanted to ask if she was joking, but there wasn't the slightest levity in her eyes. Her soft smile was clearly forced, maybe to keep me calm or perhaps to calm herself. "Don't worry, this is not a punishment," she said. "I think we're all going to have a great weekend." Naturally, Kathy absolutely lost her mind. She went into a full tantrum. My parents had to tediously undo all the damage I'd done over the years of fibs and tall tales. Even I was a little nervous. I stayed awake that night imagining the view from inside a microwave, slowly spinning round and round. My father dragged me out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning, down to the old docks. There wasn't anything new. Fishing was our tradition, the way we bonded. But that day, his heart wasn't in it. We didn't even speak more than a couple words. He just stared at me with a quiet agony in his eyes, like there was something he was desperate to say, but couldn't. As our John boat lazily pierced the early morning fog, and by the time we made it back, my bags were already packed. Our mother drove us for hours, as far from civilization as you can imagine. Every time I thought the road couldn't possibly get any more rural, more narrow, more pockmarked and washed out, I was proven wrong again and again, until what we were driving on couldn't be called roads, but seemed more like wild trails through untamed forest. Until, at last, the brush cleared all at once, and we reached an old wooden-covered bridge and a colorful sign reading, "Welcome to Weathersby Island." As it turned out, Uncle Teddy was nothing like I'd pictured. I'd always had a fear of Marilyn Manson as a kid after seeing him on the cover of a magazine, and that was how I imagined Teddy. Dark, brooding, skinny, pale. In truth, he was a barrel of a man, muscular but big-bellied with a full bushy beard. He swept me and Kathy up in his arms and hugged us so hard I felt I might pop.
"Your folks have told me so much about you, kids," he said with a big grin, "including a rumor about a certain fondness for chocolate chip cookies. I hope it's true, because I've got a batch hot out of the oven."
I loved my first full day at Weathersby. It was like the platonic ideal of a small-town Americana, like something I'd only ever seen in postcards and picture books. I was usually nervous around strange adults, but not here. Everyone was all smiles. They liked to congregate on the hill around the town's impressive church. And there I made fast friends with a boy named Colin, who'd also been dragged here by his parents. We spent the day exploring the woods and pretended it was a Minecraft world, building little dirt houses and fighting imaginary creepers with sticks. Uncle Teddy's land was one of rolling hills, where the wind whispered through the longer grass, like fingers brushing hair. It was a horse ranch, and his farmhouse was positioned just right to give us a constant view of the beauty of the herd. "Rule number one out here," he explained as he gave us the tour, "is never to go out at night. Heck, just stay all nice and cozy in your room whenever the sun's down, okay, bud?" "Why?" I asked. He paused. "Coyotes," he said. "They come out at night sometimes. They're not too bad or anything, but I just don't want you kids getting hurt is all." Indeed, that night was the first time I noticed something strange about this town, but it was certainly no coyote. I was lying in my bedroom looking out at the horses in the field just behind the house. There were 10 mares to one stallion, whom Teddy liked to joke was the luckiest guy on earth. But something was off with him that night. All the others grazed, not noticing I was watching, but he was staring right at me, matching my gaze. I shuddered as if I'd been caught doing something wrong. Something about it gave me goosebumps. How absolutely still he was. How even his tail didn't sway in the wind. The way both of his eyes faced me directly, their gaze boring into my soul. I could tell something was wrong about that, but my child brain couldn't figure out what. In the end, I just closed the curtains and willed myself to sleep. The next morning, I told Uncle Teddy about it, and he laughed. "That old boy, you must have been seeing things." He showed me to the stallion who, in the daylight, looked like just a regular horse again, chomping on hay. "See how horses have their eyes on the sides of their heads? That's so they can see them nasty wolves coming from any direction," he explained patiently. "To be looking right at you like that, they'd have been smack dab on the front of his face, like a predator. And this big boy isn't a predator, is he? He loves his carrots and oats." I giggled and agreed and felt rather silly about the whole thing. Still, I kept my bedroom curtains closed every night from there on. After that, me and Colin set about the task kids were best at, completely wasting a summer's day. At some point that afternoon, he asked if I'd seen the town graveyard. I told him, yes, of course. There was a modest one just down the hill from the church, a humble baker's dozen granite gravestones aligned in rows. He grinned. "No," he said smugly. "I meant the real graveyard." He led me far behind the church, to the single point furthest from civilization on the tiny island. What waited there was like no graveyard I'd ever seen. What must have been hundreds of rudimentary markers, made of sticks and antlers and mud and all the basic components of the woods, were interspersed between the trees without rhyme or reason, like a force of their own. We only knew they were graves by the patches of discolored dirt at their base, and the fact that some of the markers looked like crosses, though most were more esoteric symbols. Some of them looked old, very old. I wondered how on earth they could have remained standing. But then I noticed that no wind reached the graveyard, not even the slightest breeze. "Pretty cool, right? I mean, what do you think they buried here?" he asked. "I don't think they're people graves. There's no way this many people lived here in this town's whole history. Besides, they're too small." He's right, I thought. No graves should be this small. Not ever. For some reason, the thought sent a chill up my spine. I don't know, pets? "Nah, that's lame," he laughed. "I'm thinking aliens." "Aliens? Well, Brian told me... Oh, Brian was here before you. He was cool. Well, he was the one who found this graveyard, but also he snuck out of the house one night, yeah? To find a phone or something. I don't remember. And anyway, he saw this creature outside his house, like, just kind of watching them. And he said it, He was talking too fast, and his words were getting tangled up in knots. Well, basically, the way he described it, I thought it had to be an alien. Nothing from Earth is that weird. I don't know, I shrugged sheepishly. I think Earth has a lot of weird stuff on it. He ignored me and kept going. Anyway, I think that's what they do when, like, UFOs fly over the town and they all get their guns and go shoot them down, and then they bury them right in here in the...
What in the hell are you boys doing? Uncle Teddy's roar almost sent us jumping out of our skins. We turned around to see a man we almost didn't recognize. Eyes that seemed alight with fire. A face that seemed burned red. Hands balled into fists. I'd never seen Teddy with anything less than a big goofy grin. Now he looked about ready to strangle us.
We're so sorry, Uncle. We were just...
Now, I want you to listen here, boy. I don't care who you are, nephew or not. I'll wring your neck out like a towel if I ever see you set foot here again. He was biting his lip, as if to quell his shouting fit. This here is sacred ground, boy. Sacred. Do you have any idea what that means? It was only after a few minutes of begging and crying that his expression finally began to soften, like water being dumped on a raging fire. We swore on our immortal souls we would never even glance in the graveyard's direction again for as long as we lived. Thus, with a painful slap to the back of our heads and a promise to tell our parents, Teddy silently led us home. I was woken late that night by the sound of the church bells, the ding of them like a whip cracking in my skull. I tried to retreat right back into the safe realm of dreams, but in the silence, I slowly registered another sound, one much lower, more guttural. I cracked my eyes open just enough to see the vague silhouette of something tall and heavy set just behind the curtains of the window, faintly backlit by the pale moonlight. I could hear the snorting and breathing of a horse, but it sounded somehow sickly, as if it were struggling to push air around something stuck in its throat, something that shook and rattled against its vocal cords every time it tried to inhale. All I could do was cower under my blanket and convince myself it would protect me. I must have managed to sleep at some point, for in a moment it was morning and the silhouette was gone. The next morning, Uncle Teddy took me and Colin out fishing on a John boat, just like Dad would do. He was back to his old happy self, and it was hard to believe this was the same man who'd threatened to wring out my neck the day before. Something about the way he talked made even the boring stuff sound interesting. He taught us about the cypress trees that seemed to reach up from the waters like the fingers of a drowning giant, and about this wasting disease that plagued every deer in the area. And moreover, he'd go into history and politics, and we were in awe, for this was the first time a grown-up had talked to us about these subjects, as if we were equals. We didn't understand it all, of course, but we were fascinated all the same, as he told us how he'd reacted to 9/11, the assassination of JFK, the World Wars, until we started wondering how he could possibly be old enough to remember all that stuff. Every time we asked, he just laughed and flashed us a knowing smile.
Have you ever read the Bible, boys? Not like hearing tidbits in Sunday school. I mean, read it with your own eyes, cover to cover.
He eventually asked and sucked his teeth when we shook our heads.
Well, you weren't raised right. By the time I was your age, I'd memorized it front to back. It and the Quran, the Avesta, the Bhagavad Gita.
And he'd started telling us Bible stories. We wanted to complain that we heard them all in Sunday school, but his were different. Everything was all twisted up when he told it, but he spoke with such absolute certainty. Everything was all twisted up when he told it, but he spoke with such absolute certainty and confidence that we almost believed him over the good book itself. It felt exciting, like we were being led in on secret truths no other grown-ups would tell us. He told us about how Abraham really did sacrifice his son at Moriah, how Job killed his own family to prove his devotion, how the Canaanites ceased their offerings to Moloch and began giving to God instead. But soon we weren't having fun anymore. His voice was getting lower, more serious. The stories were getting more violent.
The children had insulted one of God's prophets in Israel, and thus insulted God himself. That means a death warrant from heaven itself, something that absolutely must be enacted under pain of perdition. He said, Elisha took them, all 40 of them, and drowned them in the River Jordan, one by one, held their heads under the water. But he took no joy in this. In fact, after his work was done, he fell to his knees and wept. But God came to him, cradled his cheek, and wiped away his tears. You are not evil, my son, he told him. You are merely my hands here on earth.
Something broke in his voice. His smile widened, but there was nothing soothing about it anymore.
Don't you see? Isn't it beautiful?
He was practically manic now, speaking faster and faster.
Sometimes people need to do horrible things for higher purposes. It doesn't make them wrong. It doesn't make them evil. Who could possibly judge them for doing what's right? What happened to those children? It had to happen. Don't you see? Elisha was a good man. being chosen by higher power and doing your duty, it's a gift, not evil. You're still a good person. You understand that, don't you? Don't you?
There was a long silence. Uncle Teddy looked back and forth between us, eyes puffy as if ready to cry. He seemed to scour every inch of our expressions for what? I think it was a hint of understanding, a sign we agreed with him, as if we could thereby absolve him of his guilt. But it never came. A certain darkness filled his eyes, and he turned away with a sigh, not quite disappointment, more like resignation.
No, of course you don't.
Uncle Teddy didn't speak another word the entire rest of the trip, just stared out into the waters until the boat shored itself all on its own. Afterwards, me and Colin went to lie together up on the hill, reading shapes into the clouds in some unspoken mutual agreement to forget what had just happened. Somehow I drifted off to sleep upon that shaded hill, and when I woke, Colin was gone, and the sun was setting. I was out after curfew. I crept back to the dimly lit farmhouse, expecting a reprimand. I found a much stranger sight instead. On one side of the kitchen island, all facing away from me, was Colin, flanked by Teddy, and a woman I believed was his mother. My mom was across from them, facing me, and while she wasn't actively crying, her eyes looked red and raw. The atmosphere felt heavy, like this was something I wasn't supposed to see, so I retreated to my room and tried to distract myself. A few hours later, I heard the town's old church bells ringing through the night. I never saw Colin again after that, and no one even mentioned him. I told myself he just went home, but I never felt sure. The next morning, the first clouds hovered over Weathersby, the gray, monstrous type that rumbled like an approaching army, all looming blasphemies, disgracing a sky that was supposed to be perfect and blue. The atmosphere of the town changed with it. Nobody was smiling anymore. The locals watched me from their windows and porches with faces of stone, whispering to each other. I felt like everyone was in on some big conspiracy of which only I had been excluded. Mom tried her best to act as though everything were okay, but every smile was a little faker than the last, and the way she threw herself into cooking and housework seemed increasingly desperate, as if she were trying to distract herself. I told her I wasn't having fun anymore, begged to go back home, but she only stared at me, the exact same way my father had on that foggy morning.
"Everything's going to be okay, baby."
She laid a hand on my shoulder.
"Why don't you go play with the other kids? Surely that will make you feel better."
But they were all going through the same thing I was. I noticed there were fewer kids congregating on the hill around the church than I remembered from my first day. That was because, they explained, a number of them had gone home over the past couple nights. Our hopeful euphemism for disappeared. I learned also that every single one of us had been dragged here by our parents, supposedly to visit extended family. Despite the wealth of middle-aged married couples, not a single kid in all of Weathersby was a local. I never saw a trace of Teddy all day. Well, I think I didn't. Once I was looking wistfully out into the forest down the hill, and I imagined that I could just start running and swimming and get far away from this place. And I saw something. Something that prowled the bushes on all fours, nose to the ground as if tracing the scent of prey. Must be a coyote, I thought, just from the shape of it in the blurry distance. But there was something about the brief glimpses of its fur, thick and curly and muddy brown, that reminded me of the strands of Teddy's bushy beard, and for the rest of the day, lingering in the back of my mind was the mental image of him crawling on his hands and knees, stalking the wilderness like an animal. Later I passed by the horse fields on the way home, and noticed them all look up to stare at me in almost perfect sync. It wasn't like the stallion had the first night, with that statuesque stillness and both blank, empty eyes angled directly at me in impossible ways. They were all regular horses beneath the sunlight, and yet, I was still unnerved by how they looked at me, patiently, expectantly. It was all maddening, knowing something bad was about to happen. Was happening, maybe, unseen in the background. Yet to have the day stretch out quietly, uneventfully, it made even the air seem thicker, harder to breathe. Every child has an innate sense like that. Some ability to tell when darkness was looming in on the peripheries of their simple world, even if they couldn't understand it. I knew deep down that some terrible series of events had been set in motion, as irreversible and unstoppable as a runaway train, but I could not see its tracks. As the sun set, I sensed I did not have much longer left to wait.
I prayed before, in a way. Those rote, sing-song prayers they made you memorize at Sunday school. But that night, I'd ever truly prayed to God. The storm rolled in. It was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. The raindrops sounded like millions of fists slamming against the roof, trying to get in. And the blare of the wind sounded almost human, like a wailing of despair that peaked and troughed in pitch and volume but would never, ever end. The crash of thunder was like some cosmic blacksmith's hammer against the anvil of Earth, rattling the windows and leaving me shivering, veins pulsing with adrenaline. The house creaked and groaned all around me, as if it were about to come undone, be reduced to its constituent parts and scattered like an ant's nest beneath a garden hose. Almost worse than what I heard was what I didn't hear. The cacophony of the storm drowned all other sounds. I glanced to the window, wondering if the thing was once more standing just beyond that thin border. Hell, there could be an entire herd of them, surrounding the house, crawling over the roof, searching for any entry point. Those gasping, choking snorts concealed by the deluge. I sat in bed and strained my ears, listening. But would I be able to tell the difference between the pounding rain and the stomping of hooves? I sat awake all night, staring at my window's curtain, analyzing it for any trace of the thing's silhouette, but there was no moon out tonight to backlight it. It could be pressing its face against the glass at that very moment, and I would have no way of knowing. Unless, of course, I pushed aside the curtain and looked. I crept forward, every single step, towards that curtain, caused my heart to rise in my chest. Every moment, I expected something to smash through the glass and grab me in a wicked claw. I watched that linen curtain slowly sway in the ambient breeze. Maybe there was nothing on the other side. Maybe I'd pull the curtain aside, see only darkness, and finally feel safe enough to sleep. All I had to do was move a bit of fabric. It would be easy. So why did it feel so impossible? I raised a hand, but it was trembling so fiercely, like a rabid animal I could not control. It inched closer and closer. Slowly, delicately, I grasped one edge of the curtain. And then, a sound, not outside the window, down the hall, right outside my bedroom. Footsteps, stomping towards my door like something nearing a full run. My heart felt like it jammed itself up in my throat. They found a way in, I thought. They used the window to distract me while they found a way in. I ran to barricade the door with a cupboard, but I was too late. The door slammed open hard enough to rattle the walls, and I shrunk before the mad creature staring at me from the darkness of the hall. Uncle Teddy. I could only barely recognize him. His shirt looked crusty and near solid with grime and effluence, like he'd accumulated a month's worth of filth in a single night. Two eyes poked like burning coals out of a face caked with dirt and ash, his jet black hair and beard twisted and knotted and bedraggled and flowing out like a lion's mane. His smell was ungodly. He reminded me of a savage man from a primal era, astounded by the sight of fire. "Get your shoes on," he commanded in a tone that brooked no questioning. "We're leaving." I couldn't argue with him. In moments, we were in his pickup truck as he drove through town like a man who knew his time was almost out. Taking the route by pure memory, I guessed, as it was impossible to see the road through that suffocating haze of rain and darkness. A bolt of lightning, near enough to rattle my teeth, pierced through the night, and for an instant illuminating the gothic, looming edifice of the town's church. He slammed the brakes, jumped out of the car, and dragged me brutally along by the wrist. This was my first time seeing the church from the inside, and I was baffled. There were no pulpits, no pews, only walls lined with shrines and fetishes and candles and statues of things that were no Christian figures I recognized, and a regal chair, almost throne-like, in the room's center. Teddy roughly shoved me onto the seat. "Just sit here and don't move from this room, kid," he begged breathlessly. "Just trust me, okay? You can trust your Uncle Teddy. I've done right by you, haven't I?"
"Please, please don't make me stay here." Tears were rolling down my cheeks. "Why did you bring me here? I want to go home."
The chair seemed equipped with some complex, elaborate set of restraints, but luckily he had no time to fiddle with them. He kept looking towards the door, like he was afraid someone might walk in. I tried to stand, but he grabbed me by the shoulder and forced me back down.
"I don't have time for this, you selfish little brat. Why can't you just shut up and do one little thing for your uncle?"
"Stop! Stop it! You're hurting me!"
By now, I was shouting, crying, squirming against his grip. His reaction came faster than my brain could register it. One hand grasped my throat, squeezing shut my windpipe, and suddenly in the other was the glint of a straight razor, slid from his sleeve with a magician's grace. He held it up so I could see my reflection in its shiny surface, and all the while, there was something in his eyes I'd never seen there before.
"Sit right here or I'll kill your mother, and your little sister, do you understand? I'll take this and I'll cut them into little pieces and feed them to the dogs. I'll make you watch every second. I'll make you help carve them up. Is that what you want?
Is it?" I wanted to scream at him, to tell him I hated this imposter, that I wanted the real Teddy back. But my voice caught in my throat as a sob, and Teddy fled the building at a full sprint, like he'd just pulled the pin on a grenade. "Be a big boy," my mother's voice whispered in my head. It was what she always said to me when I was scared or sad. "Be a big boy." Those words pounded against the inside of my head like a heartbeat as I curled up in the chair, knees against my chest, and wept. I stayed for as long as I could bear. My fear of Uncle Teddy battled with my fear of being alone in a macabre church during a wicked storm. I couldn't fight the oppressive feeling that the statues arranged along the various shrines were staring at me. The more I looked at the crooked figures, the less human they seemed. I know it sounds mad, but it almost felt like the walls were closing in around me, and they were all drawing nearer and nearer. All it took was the crash of lightning slamming down upon the building's spire to finally send me sprinting out the door. I was just in time. There, just down the road, came a mass of silhouettes, so close and so cohesive, they looked like a black blob oozing along the pavement. I flung myself into the bushes across the road, just moments before the ghastly procession was lit by the faint hints of moonlight. They strode with the robotic synchronization of a marching army, standing three abreast in orderly lines, some swaying jars of burning incense from chains. All moved in absolute silence. I couldn't even hear their footsteps beneath the din of the rain. I recognized the townsfolk by their figures and outfits. There was that sundress of the old lady down the street, and the overalls of the town's sole mechanic. But each was hiding their face beneath a black satin veil, like you'd see on a bride at the altar. Something about those veils terrified me most of all, just looking at them. Thinking of what might be underneath, I felt like there were firecrackers under my skin, and hands gripping and squeezing my heart and lungs. And I had to desperately fight every nerve in my body screaming at me to run. Row by row, the figures vanished into the church, and the moment they were out of sight, that squeezing, burning, twisting feeling inside me subsided. I stood and ran, going nowhere, just blindly stumbling through the rain and praying to God I'd find a way out of this nightmare, but that I'd wake up in bed to the smell of Uncle Teddy's fresh-baked cookies, and all of this would have just been a bad dream. Suddenly, I was blinded by headlights as a vehicle rounded the corner. I froze in place, feeling something tugging within me. Was it someone who would help? Or was it Teddy? Or another of those townsfolk? And those horrible nightmare veils? I almost ran and hid, and thank God I didn't. I cannot describe my relief when I recognized my family's gray SUV, and my mom rushed out to hug me, tears in her eyes. "Thank God," she whispered. "Oh, thank God." She didn't ask me to explain where I'd been. It was like she already knew. Without a word, she dropped me into the back seat alongside Kathy, still groggy from being woken up from her nap. As mom tore down the road back to the bridge, we could hear the church bells ring one final time, the sound piercing even through the lightning and rain. As we left, we passed by the horse field. I covered my eyes with my hands, not daring to look. But Kathy looked, and I'll never forget her little gasp.
"Are the horsies sick, Mommy? What's wrong with the horsies?" she asked. "What's wrong with their faces?"
The moment we drove back over the bridge, the rain ceased and the clouds cleared, as if whatever had been holding us in the palm of its hand had finally relaxed its grip and let us go. And none of us said a single word during the drive home. For years, all of this lingered in my memory only as abstract fragments, like I could remember the feeling of it, but not the substance. I always figured it was a half-remembered childhood nightmare or something I saw on TV. Only a few weeks ago did the pieces all fall together again, all at once. Recently, my parents have passed away, and my sister moved abroad, so I was the one left with the old family home. With the economy the way it is, I got priced out of it real quick. I was packing everything up when, out of my mom's antique dresser, fell an old photo album almost fallen to pieces.
I figured a trip down memory lane would help cope with having to sacrifice my childhood home to the capricious gods of the real estate market. So I sat back and spent a few minutes giggling at old baby photos, oohing at vacations I'd forgotten we'd ever taken, and I froze, just as I was about to turn a page. Somehow, deep in my heart, I knew he would be there, waiting for me. My heart rose in my throat. Something deep in my guts screamed at me to throw the book into the fire. I don't know how I worked up the courage to flip to the next page. My hand was shaking so much I almost tore the corner off. But there waited a full-page photo of me and my family and friends posing together at some local arcade for my 15th birthday. This would have been years after our trip to Uncle Teddy's, and I couldn't find a single trace of him at a glance. For a single, blissful moment, I convinced myself it'd been nothing, just my overactive imagination at it again. And then I saw him, way off to the right, barely visible through the darkness of the night. He'd been watching us from outside the window. All I could see was his head, as if it alone protruded from the inky blackness. He had his face pressed right against the glass, breath fogging the window. He had a big grin on his face, staring right into the camera, as if taking part in our group photo. And above those rows of yellowed teeth were perfectly round eyes, brown and shifting like mud flowing in the rain around horizontal, rectangular pupils. And that's the end of the story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you're on YouTube, why not show this video some love and give it a like? Maybe share it to some friends who like creepy stories and this voice that tells them. Because YouTube wants to put us into the dirt. And that won't happen, will it? No, I don't think it will. But if you're anywhere else, well, I don't know what the economy is like over there. But hey, I appreciate you for listening. Why not go do something that is challenging today? Just a little bit. That might look different for each one of you, but hey, you know what? They say that if you want some dopamine, it comes from curiosity as well. I actually listened to that on a podcast. I'm not finished it yet, but it's there. So go be curious. And while you're being curious, why don't you be a little bit chatty and come join our Discord? I mean, it's totally up to you, but it's a fun place to be. And if you'd like to support the channel even more, well, you can do that on Patreon. There is a Patreon there, because why else would you be there? Well, all I really do is early access and a little bit of an exclusive podcast. So I guess with all that said, I hope you enjoyed yourself here, and I hope I will see you in the next one. So take care now. Bye-bye then.